We've been speaking with Jean Freeman, MSP, the Minister for Social Security at the Scottish Parliament, for some time now, discussing the transfer of certain welfare payments from Westminster to Scotland. There's been a lot of work creating the Social Security Service and indeed working on the bill as it passes through the Scottish Parliament. And with an update, we're joined once again by Jean Freeman, MSP. Thank you for joining us.
Not at all, it's a pleasure.
Jean, the stage we're at just now then, the bill has gone through the Scottish Parliament and I believe passed unanimously.
Yes, it did. I was very pleased about that. It was always important to me that I got as much cross-party support for what we were proposing as I could get, and so I was delighted that we had unanimous support for the legislation.
When we last spoke, we were discussing the bill as it was heading to the chamber, and I think we had something like 150 amendments were proposed to this.
Yes, because one of the approaches that I set out to achieve, as I said, was to secure maximum consensus where we could, because this is founding legislation for Social Security in Scotland. It's for everyone in Scotland. And whilst there may be disagreements between parties on particular aspects of the benefits that we will deliver or new benefits that we might deliver, I really wanted us to get strong consensus on those legislative foundations that are very clear that Social Security is a human right, that people should be treated with dignity and respect, and that we build into the legislation safeguards to ensure that this or any future government can't easily make Social Security not a public service and certainly can't easily step away from those founding principles and those human rights obligations.
Now, I attended a meeting with various organisations at the Parliament, and there was a real sense in the room, I think, that the individuals who will be supported were really at the centre of the creation of the bill.
That's absolutely right. I'm glad that was the feeling that people had, because that is absolutely what we're doing and what we intend to continue doing. We started that in 2016 when we ran a very long consultation, but of a different sort, where we were very deliberately looking to hear from individuals with personal experience of the UK benefit system to tell us what they thought worked well in that and also what was wrong with it. And we've carried that through with the 2,500 volunteers that we have on our experience panels. So these are people with personal experience of one of those 11 benefits we'll be responsible for. And they work with us all the time on everything from how well we communicate to the design of the system and how easy it will be for an individual to find out what they're entitled to and to apply for that support.
The benefits which will be transferred are only a certain percentage of those which are controlled by Westminster. What are those?
So the benefits that will be transferred to us are disability assistance benefits, so PIP, DLA, DLA for children, industrial injuries and severe disability, a benefit that actually is now closed, but there are some folks still receiving support under that, attendance allowance, carers allowance. What is currently the Sure Start grant, so support for low-income families, which we are significantly increasing, cold weather and winter fuel payments and housing support.
Now, many of our listeners are blind or partially sighted and will be in receipt of some of these payments as well. PIP is probably one of the bigger ones, possibly one of the more complicated ones as well.
It's more complex in that, first of all, it is unlike, for example, funeral assistance, which is another of the ones we'll be responsible for, which will, by and large, be a one-off payment. PIP is more complex in that it is a regular provision of financial support to individuals and a wee bit more information and evidence to support an application is needed around the condition or the disability an individual has and the impact that that has on their independent living. Now, we have been really clear that we will not use the private sector for any one-to-one health assessments that might be needed. But in addition, I am certain that if we gather the right information at the outset, then we'll be able to make decisions that are more accurate first time round and will need fewer of those one-to-one assessments. So we're planning quite significant changes in how that disability benefit is delivered.
I think many people at the meeting, Jean, were, I think, comforted when they heard about the fact that no private companies have been involved in this. You know, when people go for assessments, it will be professionals who understand their particular needs or requirements. There was also questions around the period that some of these awards will be made, because at the moment they are quite restricted. I think there was a lot of frustration that people felt that there were conditions which people would have for the rest of their lives, and for some it was quite upsetting to go through reassessments.
Absolutely, and I completely understand why it would be, and I also, if I can be frank, think it's plain daft. If you have a long-term health condition or a disability that is not going to improve, then I really can't see why a social security agency needs to continuously assess you. What you should be able to get is a lifetime award. That means that the social security agency doesn't come back and trouble you again, but you can trouble it if you think your condition has worsened and you need a bit more financial support. Then that should sit in your hands to get back in touch. But the agency, having made that decision in the first place, should content itself that your financial support is now for the rest of your life, which at least has the benefit of allowing you to financially plan, if you like. You know what financial support you're going to get from the Social Security Agency, and you can make some plans around that with some degree of certainty. It also has the added benefit, I have to say, if we do deliver more lifetime awards, that we reduce the amount of public money we're spending on making assessments and decisions when we don't need to do that. And if we can reduce the amount of money we spend on the system, then we've got more money to spend on the benefits.
I'm sure people will be familiar with the tens of millions, if not more, that are spent on things like reassessments and so on. And obviously, yes, stopping that happening in the first place is a good thing. And in terms of those reassessments or appeals, something which I found quite interesting was the way that the Scottish Government will deal with things like that, quite different from Westminster now.
Yes, that's right. The way that we will deal with challenges to the decision that the agency makes is, first of all, aside from making the application process more straightforward and having local social security staff to help you apply, and that you can apply digitally, you can do it online, but you can also apply by telephone, you can apply on paper and fill in a form. Aside from that, at the point where the agency reaches a decision about your application and lets you know about that, we will also let you know what you can do if you disagree with us. And what would happen if you did disagree with us is that a completely different person in the Social Security Agency would look at your application from scratch and would reach their decision. That decision might be more advantageous to you, but they would write and tell you what their decision now was, and that is the decision of the agency. But again, also tell you, if you wanted to challenge that you have the right to appeal to a tribunal, and what the agency will do to help you exercise that right, if that's what you wish to do. And all the time throughout that process, we will not financially penalise somebody. So, for example, at the moment, if a decision is made about your application that reduces the amount of financial support you get, the DWP implements that decision straight away. So you are then working with less money whilst you go through the process of challenging the decision. We have put into our legislation a thing called short-term assistance. What that basically means is that if the decision of the agency is to reduce the amount of money you're receiving, we will not implement that until you have exhausted your challenges. And even if at the end of that, let's say you take it right through to tribunal, and the tribunal agrees with the agency, we're not about to come and ask you for that money back. We implement the new decision at the point the tribunal reaches its view.
Now, you mentioned about the ways that people can apply or get information. What kind of work has gone into making that accessible? I think especially for our listeners who have visual impairments as well. So, you know, making applications, getting information, sending details back to you as well.
Yes, indeed. So one of the important parts of the legislation, I think, is that we are now legally obliged to meet the inclusive communication standard. And what that means is that we should, as a social security agency, be communicating with people in whatever way works best for them. That may be audio, it may be in Braille, it may be using short videos with British Sign Language, it could be online, communicating with them by email, could be in writing. But by and large, the individual tells us the way in which they want to be communicated with, and then we deliver on that. And so I would hope that that helps ensure that any communications agency has with individuals or with larger groups of people is as accessible as it possibly can be, so that people know what it is that we are saying to them and are able to understand that. Now, to help us get that right, of course, that's one of the places where our experience panels come into their own, and being able to make sure that we are getting that right. But also, you know, key stakeholder organisations like RNIB and Send Scotland and others working with us, as they have been doing since 2016, continuing to work with us to make sure that we get all of these important parts of our delivery absolutely spot on.
There was also another question regarding PIP, and some payments have associated support as well, and there are some people who use the Motability scheme with the high rate of mobility component. Yeah. Will that transfer as well? Is that
yes.
ongoing?
Yes, it will. We've already made that commitment, and I met the chair of Motability and the chief exec a couple of months ago to talk about that, but my officials have been in constant discussion to make sure that we can transfer that scheme to Scotland and continue it for those who currently use it, but also have it there as part of the support for people coming to us for the first time.
And just finally, the bill has passed through. Is there a timetable for the rollout of these payments?
Yes, there is. We've made clear what we're calling the first wave. So the first thing that we will do towards the end of this summer is deliver the increase in carers allowance. That's the 13% increase that we are introducing to bring it up to the level of job seekers allowance. Then we will, by the summer of 2019, deliver the new Best Start grant. That's the change we're making to the old Sure Start, with significantly more financial support for low-income families, and the new funeral assistance payment. At some point towards the autumn of this year, we will then make public what the next set of benefits that we'll deliver will be following those first three.
And we will continue to follow the rollouts of the Scottish Social Security Service. For now, though, to Jean Freeman, MSP, Minister for Social Security, thank you for speaking with us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.